Welcome back to Made in March. Today is Saturday, April 4th. Two-man show here again today, just Luke and myself. Hope everyone is getting through Corona season right now. Luke, how's the quarantine treating you?
It's fine. It's a grind, so trying to kind of get through it and do what we can, entertain myself as much as I can while we have nothing else to do. Just try to come out the other end of it a better person, more grateful for sports and pretty much everything else around us. So.
Hope everyone's staying safe. What's your go-to quarantine activity?
Go-to quarantine activity is going to be Mario Kart Wii.
And who do you play as in Mario Kart?
My character of preference is Koopa Troopa.
That's not a bad choice. That's not a bad choice.
What about you?
Dude, I was always a big Toad fan.
Are you serious?
I'm not playing.
I respect it because I've also played some Mario Super Sluggers and I love Toad and the Toad characters in Mario Super Sluggers.
No, dude, you know who I love in Mario Super Sluggers?
They're good at
that
double
jumps. Crocodile.
Oh, Critter or King Kool?
Critter. Critter went nutso mode in Mario Super Sluggers. But anyways, we have a very fun segment here. It's the End of Season Awards podcast. We were obviously hoping that we'd be having this after there was a national champion crowned, but you know what? Sometimes you just gotta, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade, as they say. So we'll start it off with the biggest end of season award. This one has been very hotly debated if you've been following it. Player of the year. Luke, I'm pretty sure I know your answer, so spit.
Yeah, my answer is obviously Luka Garza. I mean, he's gotta be the player of the year in my opinion because he averaged more points and rebounds in a better conference than Obi Toppin did. He had a span of 15 games in a row scoring 20-plus points against Daniel Oturu, Matt Harms, John Teske, Xavier Tillman, people like that. So
there's so many good big guys in the Big Ten.
Yeah, so I really think Luka Garza deserved it, especially with the strength of schedule. Not only that, but I think his stats were also better than Obi Toppin's for the most part, except for shooting percentage, but
his
shooting percentage was still 55.
His compiling stats, like when you look at like points, rebounds, probably not assists, but like stuff like that, Luka Garza has way more than Obi Toppin. Not way more, but he is better than Obi Toppin in those categories because I think he had the ball in his hands a lot more than Obi Toppin. Like,
yes,
Dayton had another go-to player in Jalen Crutcher, so they had guys they could spread the ball around, whereas Luka Garza, he was basically Iowa's team.
I actually would disagree with that.
You would?
Okay. For a short span, yes, when they only had like six players playing on scholarship because of injuries. But they also had Wieskamp, who really trailed off towards the end of the year, but he was good at the beginning. CJ Frederick was a big part this year. And I don't think it's to be discredited what Ryan Kriener did off the bench.
Kriener the senior.
He gave Iowa some big minutes down the stretch. And so that would be,
I don't hate that pick. I mean, Luka Garza had an insane year, just double-double machine, but I'm going to have to give it to Obi Toppin of Dayton. I know I just said he averaged less points and less rebounds per game, but Obi Toppin was the most efficient player in college basketball. I mean, his field goal percentage was 63.3%. He was so efficient, and when it comes to the player of the year, there's something to be said for being on a very, very good team. Dayton was undefeated in A-10 play. I know it's not Big Ten play. I know that there's less competition, but they were undefeated then. Their only two losses came in overtime. They were slated as a one seed if the bracket would have happened. And obviously, he's just got that flash. He throws down those dunks, and you just think to yourself, this man is the player of the year. I'd give it to Obi Toppin.
All right, well, let me throw something back at you. Versus AP-ranked opponents, Garza faced 11, Obi Toppin faced 1. But here's the real point of it. Against those 11 opponents, Luka Garza averaged 26.5 a game. 10 out of 11 games, he had 20-plus points, and he averaged 11.3 rebounds. So against AP top 25 teams this year, Garza averaged a double-double.
So basically Big Ten play. A lot of the Big Ten, I think over half, was ranked at many points during the year.
But when you play AP top 25 teams and average a double-double,
I love Luka Garza. You're not understanding this, Luke. I'm not trying to debate you. I've got Luka Garza up for another award. I'm not a Luka Garza hater here. I just think the year Dayton had, kind of the story that it tells, I feel like Obi Toppin was a fantastic choice.
I don't know about that, but you know, it's just when Garza leads in points per games, rebounds per games, blocks per games, has a better conference, and 7 more top 25 wins. I know Dayton didn't have the opportunity, so that stat's not as important. But points per game.
And when Dayton game, and when blocks. Dayton's beating George Washington by 35, Obi Toppin's going to be on the bench. He's not going to be playing the whole game.
Okay, but they had some close ones.
Yeah, they did, and I'm not. Once again, I really like Luka Garza. Do you want to hear my top five actually for Player of the Year?
Go ahead.
Goes Obi Toppin 1. Close second is Luka Garza at 2. Number 3.
I'd say
Udoka. I would say Peyton Pritchard at 3. Peyton Pritchard of Oregon. Number 4, Udoka Azubuike of Kansas.
Yeah, that's right. I had him at three.
And then number 5, I would put Marcus Howard of Marquette. Like, Marcus Howard is averaging like almost 30 points maybe. But when you play for a team that's not ranked, I'm sorry, but the sad reality is you're not going to win Player of the Year.
It's true. Iowa was barely ranked at the end of the year.
Yeah, and I take, like, personally, when I'm thinking of my Player of the Year, that matters.
It's fair. And then Wesley and Alex both had Obi Toppin. They cannot be here, but those are the two people.
Alex didn't have Marcus Howard?
No.
Biggest Marquette fan known to man? That's surprising.
Yeah, Alex was making some meh arguments for Marcus Howard. Yeah.
Kind of shot those down a little bit.
Just grasping at straws.
Anyway, on to the next award, Coach of the Year. I think we're actually in agreement on this one.
Yes, this one is unanimous among all of us four.
Yep. Scott Drew Baylor.
For sure.
And now it's interesting because when you look at like the AP Coach of the Year award and like the all the other publishers who came out with their Coach of the Year, I don't think Scott Drew won any of those. A lot of them went to Anthony Grant of Dayton, which to me doesn't make sense. Like, if you're going to have Obi Toppin be your Player of the Year, then your Coach of the Year should probably not be that coach. Not to say he's a bad coach, but I think Scott Drew is easily the Coach of the Year if you just look what he's done at Baylor.
Yeah, I would agree with this. Nobody expected it. He finished the season top three.
Oh, yeah, they would have been a one seed, which...
Unbelievable.
If you look at the situation that Baylor's basketball program was in when Scott Drew was hired as head coach, it was in absolute shambles. Like, there was a mess. There was, like, allegations going around. And he built this thing from scratch. And so this is kind of like the culmination of his work. I think he would have been a perfect Coach of the Year. What was Baylor's record? Like 27-4, something like that? They were number one in the nation for
They might have had three losses.
Yeah.
Four. So, but yeah, great season for Scott Drew and the Baylor Bears. Some great stories there. Hopefully Freddie Gillespie gets to the NBA. That would just cap off an excellent story for him. So
it would. On to the next one. Favorite team to watch. This one's more of like a personal award. It's an individual sort of thing, but who's your favorite team to watch?
The UConn Huskies.
I knew you were going to say that.
They were waiting to make their run in the AAC tournament. They were heating up. They had won several games in a row. They became 18-12. Like, they were starting to look really good, and a lot of their losses were in overtime, double overtime, triple overtime. Man, some of the games that I watched against Wichita State,
That game was insane.
That game was insane.
They came back from like down 10 in 45 seconds. Yeah, it was unbelievable. Incredible.
It reminded me of the UNI game against Texas A&M in the NCAA tournament a few years back. But yeah, I mean, watching that game against Xavier at the beginning of the season, I knew I was like, UConn's back. But then they lost a transfer, which we will get to later.
I mean, they always kept games close. My favorite team to watch, this is not going to come as a surprise, but it's Rutgers. I mean, especially when they were playing at home. When Rutgers played at the Rack,
that place was popping.
The Trapezoid of Doom, as they call it. And their fans are just going wild. And, like, the Rack is a shitty arena. Like, let's be real. It is not very nice if you look at, like, the chairs and, like, the shape of it and everything. But, man, their fans brought it every time. And when their games were close at the end of the game, within 3 minutes left to play, let's say, Geo Baker was always there to hit that clutch shot. They really play like a team. And I loved watching Rutgers. And fortunately for us, they're really not losing that many players. Geo Baker's coming back for his senior year, so they should be fun to watch next year, too.
I would agree 100%.
Did Wesley and Alex submit their favorite team to watch for this award? Oh, yeah. Or no?
Well, I wouldn't agree with you 100%, but I agree with your take.
Okay.
Like, what you're saying, your reasoning, I agree 100%. Rutgers at the Rack, that place is loud. You do not want to play there. But their favorite teams to watch, Wesley said Florida State. To nobody else's surprise.
Yeah.
He's a big fan. And then Alex said Providence, second half of the season. But I was like, he kind of got to pick a team the whole season, but I respect it. Providence.
Yeah, I respect it. Providence was fun at the end of the year when they had, Pimpkins just hitting pull-up mid-rangers. Providence was fun. Ed Cooley was...
Alpha Diallo.
Yeah, they were creating something special at the end of the year. That's why it's such a shame that there was no March Madness. Providence could have gone on like an Elite Eight run. We will never know.
Yeah.
We'll never know. Now, least favorite team to watch. I can start it out on this one because Wesley and I were in full agreement here. I had Virginia. They play so slow for me. Like, I can respect a team that plays slow as long as they have some sort of competency on offense. I did not see that in Virginia. They averaged...
No, they did. At the end of the season, they were heating up.
But for the greater part of the year, they did not. They averaged 57 points per game as a team.
I'll keep your base with Virginia, but I'm going to slide a West in front of Virginia, okay? West Virginia was my least favorite team.
And I think that's a very good nomination
as well.
Their
games were boring. They played against worse opponents, less exciting games, terrible on offense. Their defense was shaky at times. It was every time you tuned into them, you didn't really know what you were going to get. You knew you were going to get bad offense in a low-scoring game. It just was not.
Miles McBride was their only weapon on offense.
I know. It was not a team that I would ever want to watch again, really, this season. If I had to pick one Power 5 team really not to watch, I would not watch West Virginia.
When regular Virginia, my nomination, is playing like Notre Dame and they win like 54-53, you're like, oh my God, it's a close game. Like, but there's maybe a buzzer beater. And it's... You would think that. That's what one would think. But I watched that game, and it is so boring. You just dribble, dribble, dribble for 30 seconds, and then maybe try to draw up a play.
But there's excitement from the crowd. The players are excited. It's intense. West Virginia just seems super lax. Like, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Almost as if they didn't care.
Nobody's coming out. It's like the court's not all that special. But Virginia's a defending champion, and... They always bring out the fans. I think they're more fun to watch than people think. I'm not saying they're super fun to watch.
Maybe it's just the contrast between their team when they won it all the year before, which was actually pretty fun to watch.
Yeah.
Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter. They were pretty fun to watch.
I think Kihei Clark was actually starting to turn it on at the end of the season. So
Kihei Clark was kind of that dude at the end of games.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only kind of silver lining for Virginia. They were, when Kihei Clark was hitting daggers at the end of the game, that was actually fun to watch.
Absolutely. Move on to the most disappointing team of the year.
Who you got in that one?
I have UNC.
I do too.
I don't think that this is a competition. Wesley said Florida. He said UNC is obviously honorable mention. And then Alex also said UNC. So
I mean,
Florida was disappointing, but Florida was going to wiggle their way into the tournament at the end of the year.
They weren't going to win a game in the tournament.
They weren't. I mean, well, I don't think so either, but yeah. UNC... Was
UNC
what,
was 14-19. They were 6-14 in ACC play. Sorry, all you UNC fans out there, but this was just a rough one. They were ranked top 10 going into the year.
And I hate the excuses of, well,
they lost Cole Anthony.
They lost, yeah. Like, well, Cole Anthony went down, yeah, but you're UNC. You should have better players.
And they did. They had five stars who just couldn't seem to gel.
Yeah.
Roy Williams gave up
on them way too early.
Yeah. I will never forget Roy Williams when he said, you know what, this is like my least talented team I've ever had. And then they lost their next game, and his response was, fire me. It's just so funny because he knows he's not going to get fired. But UNC, at the end of the year, they started to show a little bit of signs of life in the ACC tournament. Before that, obviously, eventually got shut down. But yeah, they were so disappointing this whole year. They kept losing and losing and losing. You thought they were going to maybe turn it around, but they never did. As for Florida... That's not a bad pick if you're going to pick another team other than UNC. They were ranked number 6 preseason, and they disappointed. I've got a Florida player for the next award, so I won't go too much into it. But we might as well get right to it. Most disappointing player.
We definitely agree with this one. I said at the beginning of the year he should be on the Wooden Award watch list, and he could very well win it. Not even close. Kerry Blackshear was a transfer from Virginia Tech. I was excited to watch. He was dominant at Virginia Tech. He was explosive going into Florida, which is a really
good
basketball culture.
Pairing him up with 2 5 stars.
Yeah, but I think that was a poorly coached team too. I mean, it's obviously not all on the coach. Kerry Blackshear did not come to play every day. But I don't know. Florida was kind of a mess, especially Kerry Blackshear.
And if you look at Kerry Blackshear's stats, like, I'm not going to sit here and say they're like world beating or whatever, but 12.8 points per game, 7.5 rebounds per game, and 43% from the field. Like, those aren't blowing anyone away, but they're not bad. And, like, you look at those and you're like, that doesn't sound like the most disappointing player of the year. But you're right. Before the season started, he was in possible Wooden Player of the Year conversations. Thought he was going to have a huge year because even though those stats are okay, that was a regression from what he did at Virginia Tech when there were a lot of other main guys. He was the guy at Florida, and he couldn't convert.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Alex did not submit one for this. But
I know who Wesley submitted.
Wesley had Nojel Eastern, which is a very good pick.
Nojel Eastern of Purdue. He was ranked like on ESPN's top 40 players.
He was disappointed.
Going into the year.
What a disappointment.
And he somehow forgot how to play offense. He'd go like 1 for 8 from the field. He was
a pretty stout defender. I'll give him that, but if you want to be a top 40 player, you can't be shooting like 25% from the field.
Like he better be a stout defender, because if you're that awful on offense, like I would hope you're good on defense.
I would agree. Then we move on. Next award you got.
Next award is best mid-major team. That is what we like to pride ourselves on here at Made in March, our mid-major knowledge. So I'll let you go first, Luke.
All right. So obviously a lot of teams to take into consideration here. I'm torn because I don't know if I want to go with a top seed or if I want to go with a low seed.
I go with a low seed. Yeah, you can interpret this question a lot of ways.
Because Gonzaga is technically a mid-major.
You could say Gonzaga is a mid-major. You could say, oh, San Diego State and Dayton, those are two mid-majors. And those would be valid answers, but explain how you're
going to answer. Okay, so I'll make my pick for mid-major of the year for like top – for like the high ranked mid majors, and then I'll go to like the lower ones a little bit. So for high ones, I'm gonna go a little bit I'm gonna say San Diego State. Dayton was really impressive with Obi Toppin, but San Diego State, what they did was just impressive. I actually can't believe that they didn't go undefeated. The resiliency, Malachi Flynn was really good.
Don't forget Matt Mitchell,
definitely I would say them. And if I'm going lower seeds a little bit, I would say it's Stephen F. Austin for sure.
I never thought I'd see the day.
I gotta respect it. What were they? 27 or 28 and
they were 28-3.
Yeah,
and
they were effective. They had the big upset win at Duke. They were a team to watch out for.
You stole my pick. Wesley was slandering my name a little bit for when he saw that I put SFA as my best mid major. He's like, how can you say that? There's Dayton and San Diego State. And while all those teams surprised, I would say relative to expectations, SFA may have been the most surprising. Do you know that they were picked to finish fourth in the Southland Conference preseason? And that is a far cry from what they finished at, going 28-3, beating Duke when Duke was number 1 at Cameron Indoor Stadium. And Kevon Harris, Southland Player of the Year, as we all know, he is that dude.
That dude, yes.
This is a special year for SFA, and it's a homer pick, obviously, as I love my Lumberjacks, but I'd have to give it to them.
Yeah, so Alex and Wesley took it in different directions. Wesley took the top seed, like he went with Dayton, respectable.
Yeah,
and
that's absolutely fair.
Alex went with lower seeds. Alex went with Eastern Tennessee State, ETSU.
And I really like that pick as well. East Tennessee State, they won their last 13 games
out of the SoCon year.
Out of the SoCon Conference. I love the SoCon. They won their last 13 games, including the SoCon Conference Tournament. They were looking primed for like a possible Sweet 16 run in March Madness. It's a shame we didn't get to see, of course. But ETSU, East Tennessee State, they were definitely a very good mid-major team. What do you think they would have been seeded?
On the 11 or 10 line.
That's
10 or 11 line.
I don't know if they would have made it up to 10, but I would have absolutely been there for that. Like, I would have been in agreement.
Yeah.
They probably would have gotten an 11, but yeah, they were good.
Then we move on to our next award. This one's kind of...
It's a little bit of a joke.
It's a Made in March award.
Yes.
So, memeiest meme team of
the
all.
The memeiest meme team.
So, I'm going to go Torero's, no doubt.
Let's first, for any new-ish listeners, let's basically explain what a meme team is. So, at the start of the year, when we were kind of just getting our grasp on, okay, these teams are good, these teams are bad, and these teams are, like, otherworldly bad, we started calling them meme teams. So Nebraska was a meme team.
Yes.
Northwestern was a meme team. So basically the two bottom dwellers of the Big Ten. The San Diego Toreros, which you predicted to be a good team this year, they're a meme team. Any other meme teams? Providence was for a while.
Providence was.
DePaul turned into a meme team, yes. Yeah, we're in agreement though. It's the San Diego Toreros.
Oh, what's the team called? Some school from Mississippi Valley State, because they got beat by like...
Oh, Arkansas Pine Bluff?
No, not Arkansas. No, no.
They were a meme team, though.
Mississippi Valley State, because they got beat by Utah by like 80-something points. So this was earlier in the season. So that's just inexcusable. So definitely, I would have to go with the San Diego Toreros, because that one bit me in the ass.
Like how, like at the beginning of the year, you're like, yo, watch out for this San Diego team. They could be good.
Last year in the WCC tournament, they actually looked fairly good, but...
But instead they ended up going 9-23 and
last in the conference.
And I think they lost to the Zags by 50 at one point.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. But they were just a meme team. It was fun to just look at the scoreboard and be like, oh, how much did the Toreros lose by today?
Has UNC come into the meme team conversation too, though?
I believe they have.
They very well could have.
Did Wesley and Alex submit something for this one?
Yes, Wesley submitted Nebraska Ball.
That's a good one because it's kind of just the name that goes along with them. Nebraska Ball, that just sounds like a meme team.
I'd agree. But your pick was it?
I had the Toreros. Toreros, as well. Yeah, for they sure. Were just a joke.
100%. Move on to the next award.
Maybe a more serious award here. Favorite player to watch. I was torn on this one.
It's a tough one.
I was torn between Peyton Pritchard of Oregon, who I said was third in my player of the year list, and Geo Baker of Rutgers, who's on my favorite team to watch. Eventually, though, I did go with Peyton Pritchard of Oregon. He was just the guy that could do it all out there. He would have, 20-plus points in a game. He would have maybe 7-8 assists, and then he would also snag, like, 5 boards, and he would have, like, 3 steals out there, and he never stepped off the court. Did you ever notice that about Peyton Pritchard? Mm-hmm. This dude was playing 40 minutes every single game, just going nonstop. He put the team on his back. And even when he had a bad shooting night, you knew that if it got down to the last few minutes, Peyton Pritchard was still going to be taking that shot because he was the leader of that team. Super fun to watch. He's just a winner. He's the epitome of a winner.
That's true. He is. For me, I would say Luka Garza. I would agree with Wesley on this one. This is kind of a hometown pick for me, but I really thought it was fun to watch him because every time he got the ball, something was happening. Every shot, it seemed like, went in. When he got the ball in the post, stepped back for 3. He was energetic. He liked to celebrate. He got the crowds riled up. He was all about having fun out there, too. He was just incredibly fun to watch for me, especially since Iowa basketball hasn't had a player of his caliber for a while. The last person to be considered for an All-American award was Jared Utoff.
What about Peter Jack?
Peter Jack was not quite there. He wasn't there. Jared Utoff was a little bit better.
This is where me and you kind of differ. Like, I love Luke Garza. Yeah. Once again, he's coming up
on and a later award. And I like big men. I like watching big men do
like
it.
Like, so. I personally, I don't know if I really mess with watching big men. Like, that's not exactly what I, look for when I'm watching a basketball game. I kind of like the point guards. I kind of like the Miles Powells of the world. Once again, as I said, an honorable mention for me was Geo Baker. I loved it when he would just take these step-back threes. But, you got to respect that pick if you love the big man part of the game. I know Wesley, he's a pretty big man himself. So he loves watching the big men.
Alex did say Marcus Howard.
Well, in other words, the sky is still blue.
So, but definitely, I would also say Io would be a good candidate.
I would assume fun to watch. Yeah, absolutely.
And don't discount Daniel Oturu. He was really fun to watch. Another big man. Yes, I would 100% submit him too.
I would also submit Miles Powell. Miles Powell is fun to watch.
Not like last year. He was not himself compared to last year.
I mean, he dealt with injuries and whatnot, but yes. But I actually really also like Alex's pick of Marcus Howard. Every time Marcus Howard had the ball, you knew something was happening. He's electric out there.
I wish that were true all the time, but I went to the Marquette-Creighton game, which Marcus Howard had 9 points with like 2 minutes left.
That game was kind of an anomaly.
He was throwing up bricks the entire game.
That was an awful offensive game, if I recall.
Yeah.
Like, it was not Marquette versus Creighton. You're expecting like, oh my God, this is going to be like 95-94.
And nope. Marquette was throwing up bricks. Marcus Howard was throwing up bricks that game. It was irritating.
Next we have most surprising team. This is kind of, you can interpret this one in many ways. Basically just a team that surprised relative to their expectations going into the year. Who'd you have?
I got to say Rutgers for this one. Yeah, nobody expected Rutgers to do what they did. So I respect the heck out of Rutgers. Really tough conference to play in. Nobody thought they would do anything, but they really stepped up to the challenge.
They were above 500 in the Big Ten, right?
Yeah, took it head on above 500 in the Big Ten for the first time ever. I really like their coach, Steve Peichel, how he turned this program around. I think this is the first year of many that Rutgers is going to start to get good.
I agree. I think Steve Peichel's doing some great things down there in New Jersey. My most surprising team would be San Diego State. I mean, in the Mountain West Conference, they were not projected to finish first. Utah State was the unanimous, like, this is the best team in the conference. I don't even know if San Diego State was second. I would guess maybe, but they ended up 30-2. They had wins over Creighton, Iowa, and BYU. And they had a legitimate top 15 player in college basketball in Malachi Flynn. Mm-hmm. He's another player that could have been most fun player to watch. And obviously not to be forgot about is Matt Mitchell, another great player on that team. I mean, they exceeded expectations. There was one point in the year that I genuinely thought they were going to go into March Madness undefeated. They looked that dominant.
The chances were high.
They were. And, you know, when you're not even expected to finish first in your mid-major conference like that, that's pretty shocking.
I mean, there are some other Big Ten teams you can consider. Wesley picked Illinois for his, but like I said earlier in the year, I said Illinois and Penn State are going to be good. I wouldn't be surprised if they're good. But mm-hmm. Wesley was surprised with how good Illinois was. And Illinois had a great season. A very good team. So.
You can credit that to the player that you mentioned earlier, Io DeSumo.
Yeah, and I would actually say their size helped them a lot too. And Georgi Bishanishvili and Kofi Coburn was huge for them this year. He was. Big paint presence. So, and then Alex did not choose an award for this one.
Well, classic Alex.
Classic Alex.
Most surprising player, this is once again relative to expectations, I had Luka Garza. Because he was not on ESPN's top 100 players going into the year. Do you know that? Like, that just seems crazy. For the year he had, like, and you're an Iowa fan, so I'll ask you, what were, like, Iowa's expectations for Luka Garza going into the year?
I expected him to be a solid big man. One that wasn't going to, that could have gotten considered for an All-Big Ten award. Not like,
yeah,
like, I'm saying, like, second team All-Big Ten, I think he could have gotten that. Based on how he had improved from his freshman to his sophomore year. This was a big jump. This was exponential. I did not expect that much out of him, but he's one of the hardest workers, so I'm not necessarily as surprised as probably you guys are, because I've seen him. The way he works in the off season is ridiculous. I don't know how he does it. He's in great shape. He runs up and down the court. He's in the game all the time.
He never stops.
It's
like he has a third lung.
Yes.
And I don't know the ins and outs of Iowa basketball, so when he started doing what he was doing this year, I was like, wow, I need to get to know this guy.
Against the Big Ten opponents, too.
Absolutely.
Iowa also did not have an easy out-of-conference schedule. He was grinding the entire season. But for me, the most surprising player of the year, Malachi Flynn of San Diego State.
I like that pick, yeah.
Transfer coming in from Washington, not really expected.
From Washington State.
Washington State. Not really expected to do much.
He was expected to be like a contributor.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching the Iowa-San Diego State game where San Diego State came all the way back from like 17 or 19 down. And that's where Malachi Flynn's breakout game. It was against a good opponent. It was against a tough Iowa team at the time. They had just
It was Texas Tech. All him in that comeback.
It was all him. It was draining. It was just him. He hadn't done like really too much up to that point. He wasn't super impressive. Oh, maybe he's one of the top three leading scorers on the team, but not like
he had a buzzer beater in Mountain West Conference play as well. So like
he had a clutch gene. So I would say him. Nobody expected him to be good. Nobody knew his name. People knew Luka Garza's name in the Big Ten at least.
Yeah.
Nobody knew his name in the Mountain West, and came in and just tore it up right away. But I would also say honorable mention, John Mooney of Notre Dame. He was on a worse team, so that's why I'm not going to give it to him.
Yeah.
But this guy had double-doubles pretty much every game. So,
and if he didn't have a double-double, it wasn't because he didn't have double-digit rebounds. It was just because he didn't have double-digit points.
Yeah, but
did Wesley and Alex submit their picks for this one or no?
Yes, Wesley agreed with you and picked Luka Garza, and Alex took Io DeSumo.
Okay, so we were just talking about him.
Yeah,
you probably know the Big Ten best out of anybody here. What were expectations for Io DeSumo going into the year?
You know, I thought he was going to be good, because Illinois usually has good guards when they're good. So I knew that they were
back in like '05.
'05
when they were the runner up
against Arizona.
They had that guy in the New Jersey Nets. What was his name? Darren Williams.
Darren Williams.
They had Darren Williams.
I mean, they beat Iowa two years ago. That was when they're all young. They're still a pretty young team, but I saw potential in those guards. I saw promise in those guards. I would assume he was one of them. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he would rise to the level that he rose to, but I gotta say I have respect for Illinois. They know how to play basketball.
They do.
And I would also say to consider for this award would maybe be Lamar Stevens, although he kind of trailed off at the end of the year. So
I wouldn't say he trailed off. He was just more hot and cold at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's true.
On to the final award. Are you ready for this one, Luke?
Yes.
Game of the year. I there were probably 15 games that at some point or another during this podcast, we said, oh, that's the game of the year. That's the game of the year. But what is, now that you've had time to reflect, what is your overall game of the year? If you want me to go first,
You can go first. I got a few of them this bouncing around. This one
is a homer pick. I'm going to admit it. But that is when my Stephen F. Austin Lumberjacks went into Cameron Indoor Stadium and whooped on the Duke Blue Devils, beating them 85-83 in overtime. It was at the beginning of the year. That's really the only argument against this being the best game of the year. But, like, come on. This is the first time Duke has lost to a non-ACC opponent at home since 2000, okay? First time that they've lost to a mid-major at home since 1986. They were 28.5-point favorites, and Stephen F. Austin ended up winning. And not only that, but it was fun because that game was close the entire second half, even going back into the first half. Like, Duke had like a 10-point lead, maybe 10 points into the game. But after that, it was close the whole time. And obviously, it ended in just dramatic fashion. The Nathan Bain buzzer-beating layup where it's only him running down the court. I know I have bias in this pick, but I still feel like it has a legitimate argument for being the best game of the year.
Wesley's best game of the year was Kansas versus Baylor the second time they played when Kansas won.
Kansas won 64-61, right?
Yes. So that was a solid game.
That's a good nomination.
As for me, I would definitely take yours into consideration. Also, I would take into consideration the Evansville and Kentucky game. Nobody realizes just how big of an upset that was at this point.
But I don't know if that's the game of the year.
No, and that's why I take it into consideration.
Yeah.
Are you
considering at all the Oregon versus Arizona game that went into overtime?
That was really
good. And had a lot of missed free throws for Arizona, and Peyton Pritchard kind of just balled out?
Yes, but I'm going to say right now, Maryland versus Michigan State the first time, when Anthony Cowan just hit four dagger threes in a row.
He just hit a three. On defense, came back, hit a three.
Yeah, so
it was all because Michigan State slapped the floor.
And that was a battle for the top of the Big Ten. It was Anthony and Stick Smith, or Cowan and Stick Smith versus Cassius and Xavier Tillman.
Mm-hmm.
Watts playing great defense all game, but then Anthony Cowan turns on the clutch gene. Also, honorable mention, UConn and Wichita State.
That game was insane. I did not like the announcers in that game. It's almost like they pulled two guys off the street to announce a game.
But
it was weird. But getting back to that Maryland game, if you look at the final score, they ended up beating Michigan State by 12 points. So you'd be like, okay, how in the world is this game of the year? But, oh, it was very, very close for a long time before that. So that's a pretty good choice.
And that's it.
That wraps up our end-of-season awards.
But then
they differ quite a bit from our midseason awards, if you remember. Yeah. Some things are the same. Like, I know Coach of the Year, Scott Drew, was heavily mentioned there.
Not me. I had Steve Peichel at the time.
Really?
Yeah.
I know Player of the Year is probably pretty similar. Obviously, like, most disappointing team, UNC is going to be in there. But definitely some things changed.
Yeah, I mean, but then we'll get into some transfer news.
Absolutely.
So, Altari Gilbert, the point guard for UConn, who is actually really good. He's a 4-star. He's eligible immediately. He has transferred to Wichita State. Kind of shocking, given that 6 people just transferred away.
No, I think it's 7.
7?
Maybe 8. I don't know. Everyone's transferring out of Wichita State. They have like 3 guys that even played any minutes last year still at Wichita State. And Altari Gilbert just says, you know what? I'm transferring in. Like, what do you think his reasoning behind that is? Do you think it's because, like, oh, this guaranteed minutes?
He had guaranteed minutes at UConn, and he was going to the Big East, so yeah, I think he's looking for a player of the year in a different
Yeah. I don't know. Wichita State is so confusing. They've literally had 7 guys transfer out, and according to the Wichita State, like, rumors, another guy is set to transfer as well, and then it might be all done, but they were going to have such a strong squad next year, and I know we talked about this on the last podcast, but with everyone transferring out, Altari Gilbert better be pretty freaking good if Wichita State wants to do anything next year.
Still a lot of people that haven't decided where they're going necessarily yet, but we do have some other transfers. Like, DJ Carton hasn't decided yet. We mentioned him last podcast, so we're going to try to keep an eye on that one. He's a 4-star. Jalen Carey, point guard for Syracuse, 4-star. He has not transferred yet. But Charles O'Bannon Jr., 6'6 shooting guard from USC, 4-star, transferred to TCU.
Ooh, the Horned Frogs.
The Horned Frogs. I don't know why you would go from USC to TCU, because USC had a pretty good year this year.
Yeah, they were all right. They'd be losing the Big O if you thought that they weren't going to be able to make the tournament next year without them. But I don't know.
But they got to be bringing in some good recruits. I mean,
yeah, one would think.
But then also Alex O'Connell from Duke transferring. He'll be sitting a game. But
sitting a year? We don't know where he's transferring.
Yeah, sitting a year. But no, I don't. We don't know yet.
A lot of guys still got to make their decisions.
And Alex O'Connell was kind of big for Duke down the stretch.
He was okay, yeah.
Hit some big shots.
And think about it, that's on Duke. If he goes to like a smaller school, he could absolutely shred.
Yeah. Shooting guard from Illinois, Tavion Jones. He's transferring. Don't know where yet. Khalif Battle from Butler. Guard transferring. Don't know yet. A lot of four stars are transferring, so this is big. Trey McGowan's from Pitt. Bryce Aiken from Harvard, we mentioned last
episode. Yeah, we did, yeah.
That's a big one. So, and then Drake just had their best player go into the transfer. He's one of the best defending big men in the country, apparently.
What's his name?
His name is Liam Robbins. He was a sophomore. I think he was first team all Missouri or second team all Missouri Valley.
I can't say I've ever heard of him, but
he's like super good defender. So I would like Iowa to get him, since Cordell Pemsel is transferring from Iowa for his grad year, which kind of hurts because now we don't have a backup big man. So it would be nice if Iowa could land
him. At the end of the day, though, Iowa is not losing that many players, so. You should just be happy that Luke is coming back for another year.
That's true. But other than that, I think Nebraska had a player transfer, which was kind of absolutely hilarious because Nebraska got Kobe King, and then yeah. They had another player that just said, I'm going to dip. So, and apparently he's okay.
At the end of the day, though, I mean, all these kids, they know that they got to make these decisions for them, not for anyone else. So hopefully they don't listen to what everyone else is saying and just make whatever's the best choice for them.
And for Alex, there's a guy from UNLV who is a three-star, Jonah Antonio, shooting guard, transferring to Marquette.
Oh, there you go.
Alex likes his transfers.
He does. Any other important transfers, or should we sign off?
Sign off.
All right. So hope everyone stays safe and sane. That is also important. Make sure you are doing fine mentally during this whole quarantine corona season. We're going to still keep trying to come at you with podcasts. DM us any ideas you have if you want us to do something. We could do like favorite college basketball players of all time, anything like that. But just with the season over, it's a lot tougher to find things to talk about. But
not just with the season over, but nothing going on.
Yeah, there's like we could be doing like NBA or something right now, but as we all know, that's not happening. Anyways, until next time, this is Made in March.